Well, good afternoon to all of you, and especially those of you on the webcast today. So in our Bible study today, we now come to the last chapter of Zechariah. And that's chapter 14. The Sansino commentary mentions and actually titles this section here, The Deliverance of Jerusalem. But as we will see in this chapter, there is a lot more contained, and especially what happens at the time of the millennium or during the millennium. So let's read the first three verses. Chapter 14, it's kind of a summary just before Christ returns, or actually during the time of Christ's return. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city will be taken, the houses rifled, the women ravished. Half the city will go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. For then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. So we know that eventually Jerusalem will be attacked. And then those alive, a number of them will be taken captive. But we also see a remnant. And then Jesus Christ does come to and attack those nations who attacked Jerusalem. So now we come to verse 4. And in that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives will be split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half the mountain shall move toward the north and half toward the south. So God is very specific here. He's talking about the Mount of Olives. It was known, the Mount of Olives was known by different names in the past. It was known as the Mount on the east. Sometime later, it was known as the Mount before Jerusalem. But later, it was named the Mount of Olives because of the amount of olive trees that grew on that particular mount. So you have this split in this mountain, which is directly east of Jerusalem. And it splits east to west, or east to west. And the mountain is split in two, where it goes, half goes to the north and half to the south. A few years ago, an elder gave a sermon on the Feast of Trumpets, and he showed a Google map picture of the Mount of Olives from a satellite view. And he zeroed in on it, and he said, this is what we will see with Jesus Christ coming down to the Mount of Olives. And it was quite graphic to see that, but to know that that mount is going to split in two. And we will see that happening because we'll be coming down with Christ, as we'll see. We'll find this out in the next verse. Let's look at verse 5. You shall flee through my mountain valley, for the mountain valley will reach Azel. You shall flee as you fled in from the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. So you flee, those who were in Jerusalem would flee through this valley that's now been made. And so you have that northern part of the mountain actually filling in a current valley that is there now. And then on the south part of the mount, you have another valley that will be filled in when that southern part gets moved into that section. So the valley now will go straight through the Mount of Olives, and it'll cover those other valleys that are surrounding them now. And the valley will be directly east, going directly east from Jerusalem. Now, the Bible really doesn't say about an earthquake during the days of Uzziah, except right here. And so, according to Josephus, apparently, apparently, and the tradition is that when King Uzziah went into the temple to offer a incense, remember he was Jewish, and only Levites were to go into the temple and to offer any type of offering, and the Levites said, you know, were trying to prevent him from doing it. Well, he went ahead and did it anyway, and he became a leper. Well, apparently, according to Josephus, it was at that time that a huge earthquake occurred in Jerusalem, and people fled out of the city during that time. But here is what we want to focus on, the last part of verse 5. Thus the Lord my God will come, and all the saints with you. So as Jesus Christ is descending and that mount is split in two, we will see that happening. And the saints will be with Christ at that time. Verse 6 and 7. It's a day that it's going to be an unusual day when this occurs. There's so many things going on at the time of the return of Christ. One wonders how long that will take. Well, we find here in verse 6 and 7, it shall come to pass in that day, there'll be no light, the light shall diminish, it'll be one day, which is known to the Lord, neither day nor night, but at evening time it shall happen that it will be light. So we're talking about a unique day. Notice Isaiah 13. Isaiah 13. And beginning in verse 9. Isaiah 13 and verse 9. There's a tie-in verse here. These verses. Isaiah 13, verse 9. Behold, the day of the Lord comes with cruel, with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he'll destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven, their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. We know that prior to the return of Christ, there will be the heavenly signs. We understand that. And I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I'll make a mortal more rare than fine gold, a man more than the golden wedge of Ophir, meaning very rare. Therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth will move out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts and in the day of his fierce anger. So it appears quite a bit will be happening in that day, and how long that day will last, we'll just have to wait and see. But it's interesting verses here in Zechariah 14, verse 6 to 7. Now we come to verse 8 and 9. In that day it shall be that living waters will flow from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea. So there would be some flowing over toward the Dead Sea. And in summer and winter it shall occur. Some of them are going to go to the Western Sea, which is where it's called the Mediterranean or the Western Sea. And so we find that it'll happen all year long, summer and winter, showing that the seasons will continue. And those who have concerns about global climate change, well, in the millennium, there's still going to be summer and winter. And what's interesting about these waters coming from Jerusalem is that they won't freeze over in the summer. I mean, in the winter, nor will they dry up in the summer. They'll continue to flow out of Jerusalem. And it says, the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day it shall be, the Lord is one, and his name is one. So there will only be God who will be worshipped during that time. No other God, only the true God. Now we come to verse 10 and 11. And the land will be turned into a plain from Geba to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem. Jerusalem will be raised up and inhabited in her place. So you see actually, there's going to be some changing in geography here. We're going to see that Mount of Olives being moved half to the north, half to the south. And then you're going to find in other places in the Bible, the mountains, a lot of them will be brought low, and there's going to be a change in the geography. So Geba is about 6 miles north of Jerusalem. That was the border of Judah. And then Rimmon is down near the Beersheba area. And so Jerusalem will be exalted. So one wonders if some of the surrounding mountains will be lowered, and that'll make Jerusalem a little bit higher in elevation. It just seems that that may be what will happen. And then you find these marks of the area around Jerusalem. Benjamin's gate to the place of the first gate, the corner gate, and from the Tower of Hanel to the king's wine presses. These were entrances into the city, and so what Zechariah is showing is these are the descriptions of the borders of that future city at that particular time. And then we come to verse 11, which says, the people who will dwell in it, no longer will there be utter destruction, but Jerusalem will be safely inhabited. So no more extermination, no more slaughter, nothing that we read in verses 1 through 3 will ever happen again. And no more curse that will bring disaster. And now we come to a very graphic description of how God will deal with the wicked. It will be the plague. This will be the plague with which the Lord will strike all the people who fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh will dissolve while they stand on their feet. Their eyes will dissolve in their sockets. Their tongues will dissolve in their mouths. And it seems to be a description of someone vaporized. They're just vaporized, like some people were during Hiroshima and Nagasaki when the atomic bombs were dropped. They were just totally vaporized. Somewhat like fire and brimstone that came down on Sodom and exterminated those people. And so there will be a panic in verse 13. It shall come to pass in that day that a great panic from the Lord will be among them. Everyone will seize the hand of his neighbor and raise his hand against his neighbor's hand. And Judah will also fight at Jerusalem, or for Jerusalem. And the wealth of the nation, surrounding nations, will be gathered together, gold, silver, apparel, and great abundance. So as this all takes place, then Judah, actually, those who are in Jerusalem, will also be fighting for Jerusalem. And this is a battle that's going on, Christ dealing with the wicked as he's returning. And then you see that this plague here in verse 15 is also going to affect the animals. Horses, plague will be on the horse, the mule, the camel, the donkey, and all the cattle that will be in those camps, so will the plague be. Of all those surrounding people that are trying to come in and to destroy Jerusalem. So again, pretty graphic here. Now we come to the final section in Zechariah, and it's interesting what it focuses on. In verse 16, and we often hear these words read to us during the Feast of Tabernacles, which always has been a celebration of thanksgiving, and will be in the future, that those who are left of the nations which come against Jerusalem will go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So God will be worshipped. The King, Jesus Christ, will be worshipped. And these are peoples that come up from those nations, those who survive this particular plague, they will come up to worship God, and Jesus Christ. And it will be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain. So God is going to deal with people and that there will be no rain for them in the future. And so when you go to a Jewish synagogue during the Feast of Sukkoth, during the Feast of Tabernacles, based on these scriptures here, verse 16 and 17, they pray. They pray that God will bless them with rain for the coming season because they are keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkoth, now. So they pray for rain. And they believe it, you know, will usually start after the feast. And it usually does. You know, usually beginning in October or so, you have these winter rains coming in. And that's why the flocks are brought out of the fields. And they're not in the fields in November and December because it gets cold and the rains begin to come. So that's what they pray for even now. The Jewish commentaries and some of their scholars have speculated that it could very possibly be that it will be during the Feast of Tabernacles that the Messiah will come and set up his reign. Again, that is speculation. We don't teach that because we don't know the day nor the hour of when Christ will return. And they believe that therefore then into the millennial reign, they call it the reign of the Messiah, that keeping the Feast of Tabernacles will be a commemoration of this particular event. Well, again, that speculation, we don't know again when Christ will return, but I do believe that the Feast of Tabernacles is going to be more of a celebration of the millennial reign of Christ. Every year, people will be reminded of this millennial reign, that God is God and Christ is the King over the earth. So now we get to verse 18 and 19. The family of Egypt is chosen as an example. If the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they'll have no rain. They'll receive the plague with which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. All nations who do not come up will feel that effect later in the year with no rain. For Egypt, it would also include the flooding of the Nile. See, when the rains come, it floods the Nile, which allows it to overflow its banks so it could produce the crops alongside the banks of the Nile. Well, when you don't have that much rain coming in, either from there in Egypt or in other countries coming in with the Nile River, you have a problem. You don't have water to irrigate all those crops that would be growing alongside the river. So it would be very difficult for Egypt the following year. So that again is something that God is using here as Egypt, because it would be very difficult if no rain came upon them. Okay, then we come to verse 20. In that day, holiness to the Lord will be engraved on the bells of the horses. The pots in the Lord's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. So the bells will be inscribed with what we find in Exodus 28, verse 36. So let's look at this. Exodus 28, verse 36. Exodus 28, verse 36. And we find, actually, if you look at verse 34, we're talking about the garment that Aaron is wearing. And that a golden bell and pomegranate, a golden bell and a pomegranate were at the hem of the robe. So there were bells on Aaron, on Aaron's robe. And it also, it says, verse 35, that its sound will be heard when he goes into the holy place. And then verse 36, you shall also make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it, like the engraving of a signet, holiness to the Lord. So that would go on the turban, and you would have this engraving. this same phrase, holiness to the Lord, will be engraved on all the bells of the horses in Jerusalem and on the pots and the bowls. I think I mentioned this a couple of times, and that is when I had some discussions a number of years ago, one fella said, well, John, you can't really believe that they're going to, that all these bells on the horses are going to be inscribed. And I said, well, why not? I mean, this is what the Bible says here. Well, you really can't believe all that. That's all metaphor. I said, no, not really. And when you really think about it, I mean, even Anheuser-Busch puts, you know, Anheuser-Busch on the bridles and the bells and everything of the horses there, you know, at the Clydesdales. So I think that's possible. Not think. I know it's possible because of what God says. So it's interesting, though, that you have that phrase that is on Aaron, and which made him holy to God, and you have the bells on his hem, you've got these bells, and you also have all these pots and bowls. And in verse 21, every pot in Jerusalem and Judah will be holiness to the Lord of hosts. Everyone who sacrifices shall come and take them and cook in them. So not only will the bells of the horses have this engraved, the pots, the bowls will also have that holiness, as it says, holiness shall be holiness to the Lord of hosts. Because they will be used for the offerings that people will be bringing in. Now, if you've been listening to the Ezekiel Bible studies given by Dr. Levy, he talks about the kitchens that are going to be around the temple area within that first courtyard. And that's found in, we won't turn there, but Ezekiel 46, verse 21 to 24. So you have all these kitchens that are going to be used, and they'll have pots and pans and bowls, because they will be boiling some of the sacrifices there, whereas other sacrifices will be burnt on the burnt offering altar. So you have different types of meats being cooked in different ways. And so every pot will be holy as people are bringing in all these offerings and all these sacrifices, kind of likened to a huge, gigantic potluck that's going to take place. All these this food and for those, the Levites there, and those who are bringing these offerings. Then we come to the conclusion of the book. In that day there will no longer be a Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. What does that mean? Because we know that scriptures say that in the future there will be no longer Jew or Gentile, Scythian. Why can't a Canaanite who is repentant be in the temple area? What does this really mean? What is being spoken here? It seems to be some type of a generic statement that is being made at the end of Zechariah, because it could be referring to a spiritually unclean person, any spiritually unclean person. Because in the Hebrew, the word Canaanite can also be translated trafficker, a trafficker, a money-making merchant who exploits those coming to the temple. And that's what would happen. Years before, when Jewish people would go up to the temple, there were these traffickers, there were these shady characters out there. They were wanting to sell you some idols and sell you some of their ideas, or extract from you some of your sacrifices. And so they would, it was kind of like a harassment of the people coming into Jerusalem. God is saying that is not going to take place. No more will you have pagan objects being foisted onto you and say, hey, wouldn't you like that? Well, don't you want this idol? Why are you going into Jerusalem? Wouldn't you want this? So God is saying, no, that's not going to take place. No one is going to be taken advantage going into the temple area for the sacrifices. So apparently that's what that is referring to, showing that the only ones coming in are going to be those who are really dedicated in serving God and making sure that they are worshiping God and no other god or idol anywhere. So Zechariah concludes here with the millennial reign of Christ. And that's what we all look forward to. And that, of course, is the huge part of the gospel message. You're not noticing this, but I just saw a wild turkey just walk right across that door over there. It's amazing what's out there. Anyway, that was off topic. But next time, we will get into the book of Malachi.